Hi, I'm Tracy, and I am an alcoholic drug addict. I can't tell you exactly where in the book that it says that we enjoy a reputation that we know we don't deserve. And because I know me and who I used to be, I do enjoy the reputation that I have today. And for someone like Elise or my friend Carrie, who's here with me, to feel the way that they do about me today, it's something I don't think that I deserve because of what I'm about to tell you. But the truth of the matter is, it's been over 7.5 years that I've lived a life that I'm proud of and that I can lay my head down at night and not have any reservations about the way I acted today. So I am the product of an alcoholic father and a rageaholic mother. And I don't say that to blame them. I say that to tell you that what I learned from them was alcohol would fix it, and if I didn't have any and I yelled loud enough, you would go get me some, right? I am a liar to my core, have been since I was old enough to tell a lie. And yet everything that I'm about to tell you is the truth, because I don't have to lie anymore. I am the second of four children, the oldest daughter, and so there was two boys and two girls, and I was the middle child for about 8 years, and I am the middle child all the way through, right? I look at me, oh, don't look at me, because I don't like who you're looking at. My parents did the best that they could. My dad got sober 8 years before he passed away. I always like to include that because he was a great person in every aspect of his life, except the fact that he had no control over the amount of alcohol he put in his body, right? My mom never got well. She was a classic Al-Anon who was mad at the world, and she thought she had a reason to be mad, and I get that because I thought I had a reason to be mad for most of my life. Sure enough, come to find out, after doing some work, I find out that I'm my biggest problem. And it's easier to stay mad at myself than it is to stay mad at anybody else. My first drunk was a blackout drunk at about 14. I drank prior to that because my dad would tell us to go get his beer. I would be the first one to jump and run to go get the beer, right? So I don't remember my first drink, but I remember most of my first drunk. And it wasn't pretty. It was, like I said, the blackout. I had alcohol poisoning for a couple of days. Never occurred to me that I wouldn't do that again, right? I was the troubled child in school, I was not a troubled child. I caused trouble in school. Yeah, I don't have any reason. I have no trauma, no reason to have had the problems that I've had, but I like to drink and I like to get drunk and I like to wreck cars or drive fast or have problems. And so I'm from a small town west of here. My dad was on the school board. I roll my car and blow it up a couple of times and it makes the front page of the paper, right? The next morning he tells me, don't embarrass me again. And it continues like that, right? So I go to school. When I finally graduate from high school, friend and I, we go to Waco to go to school because that way we're far enough away from home to not have to live it or sleep at home. But we don't go to Baylor either because we can't get into Baylor. We go to a community college, so we have to get an apartment. And that ended up not going well because 28 days later, my dad called me and yanked me out of school because I had ran the credit card up and had never made it to class. Lost my license because I had too many speeding tickets that 28 days, right? So I'd like to think that first 28 days of my adulthood is what led to the last 28 days in Austin recovery. But let's face it, it happened way before that. I couldn't stay sober. I couldn't take care of myself. First thing I did after I got out of school was ended up getting married because then I wouldn't have to live with my parents, right? I kept trying to get away from my parents, but I'm the classic entitled kid. Like, I want them to take care of me, but I don't want to follow their rules in their house, right? So I go get married, and that didn't end well. I ended up having a daughter. And I wasn't prepared or ready to take care of her. So that's when I start moving back into their house, right? Because they're going to help me take care of her. And the truth of the matter is, I kind of helped them sometimes more than they helped. Like, they were the primary caretakers because I wasn't capable of being the primary caretaker because I like to party. And so rocked along like that for several years, in and out of trouble with them, and not so much with the law. Like, I got arrested once, but it was like the judge in Austin told me that it was of such poor quality and such low quantity that they couldn't even test it, right? So I got to, yeah, that's what happens when you do cocaine in Austin, Texas. Like, so I quit doing cocaine, right? I like to drink. And then I found methamphetamine, and therein lies the power that was my life. I mean, right? So that, you know, on off and on, every now and then, I was never the seeker of the drug, right? I happened to hang out with people who had the dope. And then until my daughter would, well, I guess she was about 11, so I met this fella who would later on become my husband, but at the time, it was just a dope-fueled relationship, right? He liked dope, he had the dope, I liked him, it all worked out well. We ended up getting married, and it was a successful marriage in as much as you can have a successful marriage on drugs, right? And then he was diagnosed with cancer, and he ended up passing away. And so that was the first time that it occurred to me that I might stop doing drugs because he always had the dope, and so I'm not going to go look for the dope. And so the friends that we had at the time, they feel sorry for Tracy because her husband just died, so we'll bring her the drugs, right? Like, I had the perfect cush life, except that I was unemployed. I could not go to work. Like, I just couldn't. I felt sorry for myself. I had this, you know, poor, pitiful life. And so I just kind of, like, took advantage of other people's kindness, right? I couldn't pay my electricity at my house. So I moved in to Austin to stay with some guy and take care of his kid for him. And then I ended up being diagnosed with cancer. So that was 10 years ago that I was diagnosed with cancer. I am a survivor. I'm all good. But it was pretty traumatic for me because I'd seen what a cancer diagnosis looked like, right, with him. That was not the case with me. I survived and flourished as far as my health was. But during that time, I met the last fella that propelled me into getting sober, not because he did, but because of who he was. When I met this guy, on paper, I knew I was better than him. Like, I looked down on this dude. Like, he was a 17-time convicted felon. He had just recently gotten out of prison. There was nothing about this dude that was attractive to me, right? Except the dope. That was real attractive. And then I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and then he made me feel sexy after I had a mastectomy. And whether he really made me feel sexy or because he had the good dope, I don't know what the nature of that relationship was. But 3 years later, I ended up getting arrested on Thanksgiving Day of 2010 for a couple of forgery warrants that I, like the cop, he's like, "You're going to tell me you did not know you had warrants out for forgery." And I said, "I really didn't. I mean, I assumed I had warrants for something, but I didn't know it was for forgery, right? Because I just never had, I didn't know. But I always had a warrant out for something, an unpaid speeding ticket, or I never took care of my business, right? But so I got arrested on Thanksgiving Day, and 4 days later, I was PR'd out by an attorney downtown for an 8-ball of dope. And he said to me that because I had zero criminal history, that I would get minimal probation, or he could get my charges dismissed. All I had to do was come up with $6,000 and be in court on December 17th, whatever the day was. And I couldn't pull that off. I didn't even try to pull that off, actually. Like, he showed up in court, apparently, called me that night, and I didn't even answer the phone. Like, I'm just running from things, right? So on February 2nd of 2011, dope ran out on the 1st. That fellow that I was with, he had gotten arrested on the 29th. So I was stuck in a house. My car had been impounded. My phone was out of minutes. Had a Dr. Pepper left in the refrigerator. No smokes, stolen electricity, which did not include heat because the gas had not been paid. So it was just a propane heater that you burn inside, like, you know, living the life. when at about 4 o'clock in the morning, there was a knock on the door, and it was just enough of a rhythm that I said, "Who is it?" And he said, "APD SWAT, Tracy, open the motherfucking door." Excuse my language, but that's what he said. And I said, "Hold on." That's what I said. And he said, "Really?" Like, open the door, and this calm came over me that I've not felt that calm since. Like, it was over. Because that night, I'm laying on the couch wishing I could die. I'm not going to kill myself. I've got a daughter. I've got a grandson. I'm not going to kill myself, but I don't want to live like this. And sure enough, without a roof over, because, you know, the rent hadn't been paid in a couple of months, right? I had nothing. And it was back in February 2011. It was the coldest cold snap that we'd had in over 50 years. It was cold, and I don't remember praying to God, but God gave me a roof over my head. I don't know where they came up with three hots and a cot, because I didn't have a hot meal in 120 days, but I was fed, and I didn't want for anything, really, because it didn't matter if you want for anything. You're given everything you need, right? And I'd been in there almost a week when they called my name to go downtown. And the girls were like, "Oh, wow, lucky you, you know, you're going to get out." I'm like, "Cool," because I'm not familiar with the system at the time. "Well, if they call your name on Thursday afternoon, guess what? You're not going to get out. You're going to be magistrated again." And this time it was for a first-degree felony, punishable by 5 to 99. If you're able to make bond again, we will... and the bond was $100,000. Did I say that? If you're able to make bond, we'll fit you with an ankle monitor. So what went from minimal to getting the charges dismissed just changed in the blink of an eye. And so I didn't get out for 120 days. But the morning after I was magistrated again, I rolled off the bunk, and when I read about Bill, and he says that white light experience, for the first time in my life, I knew that God was my only shot. Like, I have to do something different. My dad got sober through AA. I'm a speed freak. Like, you know, it never occurred to me I was an alcoholic because I like dope so much. So that was my excuse when my dad was sober and wanted me to go to an AA meeting with him. And I'd be like, I was smart enough to know that I didn't want to hit an AA meeting while I was using dope. Like, that I was clear on. I mean, I feel bad now that I never, like, saw him get a chip or anything like that, but I didn't, so whatever. So I go up, and on the window there's all these forms for different programs, and I see the request form for drug, you know, help with a drug problem. So I filled it out, and I circled AA and CA and NA and said, "I'm a dope fiend, and I need help." And the next morning, I get sent over to the big, you know, general population, and the following Monday, myself and one other lady are called to go to an AA meeting. And so that's where I went to my very first AA meeting, was out at Travis County. And we get back to after the meeting, and there were several women there that had been in jail for a couple of months, and they'd been filling out these request forms ever since they got there, and none of them had ever been invited to or had been allowed to go to the meeting. So I look back on things like that, and I'm like, God's been with me the whole time, right? Like, God has seen Tracy through some pretty crappy stuff, and this is the first time in my life that I'm willing to look at it and say, thank you, God. Because if I hadn't gotten to jail, I don't know where I would have ended up. I mean, I can imagine my dog went to the dope dealer's house, so I'm pretty sure that's probably where I would have ended up. Until he said, look, you're wanted by the police, and I don't need you in my house anymore. My family had shut me out. They had completely, you know, just... My brother had told my daughter when he found out I had been arrested, my sister is dead to me. I'm done. She was raised better than that. She knows better than that. I'm completely finished with her. So I stay in jail for 120 days. This woman that was in, the other woman that went to the AA meeting with me, she'd been trying to do this for the last 20 years, in and out of the program for 20 years. And she was in jail behind her fourth DWI. But she knew what was going on. She knew the big book. Like, her sponsor, prior to her getting arrested, was a pretty heavy hit. He was a pretty heavy hitter, and he was the big book thumper, and he had started his own treatment center. Like, I didn't know at the time. She's like, oh, this is, not, you know, this is who he is. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. It doesn't matter. What I've come to find out is that I heard the truth about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and a relationship with God while I was in jail. So in the meantime, they're talking about whether or not I'm going to go to prison or whether I'm going to get to go to treatment. And I'm like, please let me go to treatment. One of the women that brought the AA meeting in, she was big in the alumni here with Austin Recovery. And she said, you know, use my name, use Mike Peck's name, tell him that Austin Recovery needs you. And so I was released, well, ended up sentenced to 10 years probation, and I remember I was sitting in jail, and I said, that's a mighty fine motivator, and this girl who says, you're right, you would think it was a mighty fine motivator, but I promise it won't be enough unless you get and stay sober, right? Because I believed at the time I was one of those people who was constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself, right? Even though I always knew the lie I told. Like, I never got caught in the lie, which is why when I said I don't do dope, it never occurred to me that you didn't believe me because I was so convincing, right? Well, I was. I mean, I had a lot of coffee this morning, and I'm still feeling wired. So if y'all think I'm wired, I'm not. They can attest to that. Like, Carrie wouldn't even drink the coffee I made. But anyhow, so I learned the truth, right? Before I get to Austin Recovery. I was sentenced to Austin Recovery. And the beautiful thing about Austin Recovery was that it reinforced what I already knew. I learned some other stuff about myself while I was at Austin Recovery. And I joined the community, and I was a part of, instead of, you know, finding the differences, right? Like, early on, I went to the Cross Park campus. And when I got out of Austin Recovery, like Elise said, I went into a sober house. And the cool thing about that was there was a tech there at the time. She and I did not get along. She didn't like me. I didn't like her. We clashed. But she was a volunteer for some organization that had funded one of the girls in the sober house. And although I'd been given a bed, or assured of a bed, they had filled that bed between the time I was told I could go and when I was going to get out. Well, this girl who had the funding from some organization hit somebody over the head with a ceramic angel, and so the cops came and they came and got her, and they took her away, and this tech was her sponsor or whatever. When I'm leaving that day, she said, how are you paying for that? And I said, I got a voucher. I didn't know what that meant. She's like, from the county? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, how are you going to pay for it after that? I didn't know that that covered the deposit and 1 week's rent, right? And I was like, God's got this. God's got this. Well, sure enough, this girl had a $400 credit that woman asked the sober house people, whoever, to roll it over into my name. Like, all along, I've had things happen in my life that, because I put one foot in front of the other, God really has taken care of me. It hasn't been easy. I came out without a driver's license, without a car. I mean, I couldn't have afforded any of those things to begin with. But I also came out 100 pounds overweight, okay? The beautiful part about that was that a friend of mine gave me a bicycle, and I started riding a bicycle. And Austin is the most bike-friendly city that I can ever imagine. Thank God for that. Because then I started doing my community service at Goodwill. I was riding back and forth, and all of a sudden the weight started falling off. Right? God gave me exactly what I needed, right? Like I can contribute it to a friend, but God really has taken care of Tracy, and I recognize that because for me, God really is everything. you hear me? So I'm at the sober house. Carrie is a friend of Elise's from way back. They both got sober at 23 years old, right? How about that? That's pretty amazing to me. I was not 23 when I got sober. I was 45, whatever. So anyhow, Carrie wants to do some service work. So Carrie is bringing meetings into the sober house, right? And I'd already asked a couple of women to sponsor me, and both of them had told me no. And I look back on my life and theirs today, and I'm like, thank you, God, because those women are crazy, like certifiable. Anyhow, Carrie, she comes to the meeting. She just wants to help women. And I said, I need a sponsor. And she said, I need a sponsee. And Carrie was my first sponsor, right? And it was in a beautiful relationship. She gave me the kind of love and dedication that I needed. And yet she told me the truth. I will tell you that, and I always scan the room, and I don't, like when she said, okay, do your like fear inventory, write down everything that you're afraid of. And I'm reading the directions. It says thorough and honest, right? Thorough and honest. Like I've got to be rigorously honest. And so I make my fear inventory. And up to this point, nothing that I've said has like shaken this woman, right? She's okay. She hasn't judged me with her eyes or anything. And so I pull up my fear inventory, and she told me to write down everything I was afraid of. And so I start reading it, and I said, spiders and midgets. And she said, what? And I said, well, that's, and I gave her reasons why I was scared of both of those. I mean, there's legitimate, I had trauma as a child. But anyhow, like, I didn't know. That's how innocent I was when it came to this. Like, it said, write down everything you're afraid of. And I had rejection and my daughter having problems or whatever on my list. But those were the top two because that's the first things I think of when somebody asks me what I'm afraid of. I will tell you that the little people don't scare me anymore. And I am sorry if I've offended anybody with my language, but that's just who I was 7.5 years ago, right? So I do the step work. By the time I'm ready to make amends to my family, and by my family, I mean my brother and sister, because everybody else is gone in my family. Both of them tell me, do what you're doing. Just keep doing, you know, just stay sober. So my daughter, who was sober when I got arrested, but ended up not sober anymore once I was in jail. So I show up at her house. We got this appointment for me to do making my amends to her. And somewhere between me making the appointment and showing up to make the amends, she got drunk and forgot why I was there. And about halfway through, she jumped up, cussed me up one side and down the other, told me to get off her property and don't come back. Like, because this child was traumatized by her life with me as her mom, right? Like, I was neglectful at best, drunk at worst, right? Like, I was high. She experienced the worst and did dope with her when she turned 18. You know, like I wasn't a good mom. But 7.5 years ago, I started being a better mom, right? she continued to get drunker and drunker and drunker, and it was traumatic for her and for me. I started getting well around that aspect. But in the meantime, Carrie, after I'd been out for about a year, they opened some sober houses, and she asked me to manage her the first women's house, right? Like, my life got better. And so I went to work managing a sober house for her, got to work with women in recovery. I was riding my bike to Austin Cross Park to take my meetings in for alumni, also as part of my probation. I got to do a bunch of different things that being unemployed or unemployable, I started going to school to better my life. I've not finished that. I need to get on that. But in the meantime, then, there was a couple that brought meetings they brought a big book study to the sober house. And when I went to work for Carrie, I had to find another sponsor. So that's when I met my current sponsor. And after I finished my community service with Goodwill, I went to work for them, and I continued to be promoted up in the ranks at Goodwill, and it was a blessing to me, for the employment, but also the practice that of becoming a manager, of understanding what unmanageability looks like, but also being able to manage some aspects of my life. So 2 years ago, I was at the point where I could pay off my restitution for my crimes. And I pull into probation to ask them, how much I owe exactly. I'm pulling out, and my current sponsor, her and her husband, call me on the phone. They've got these two little boys that they're a month old, and they need a nanny. And would I consider coming to work for them because they know my character? Now, while I was in jail, I read a book. It was a real simple little piece. It was called The Nanny Diaries, and it was about these women who are nannies for these rich families in New York City, right? And it's a real fluff piece, but I remember thinking, what a cool job that would be, right? But there's not a rich family that's going to hire me because my crimes are forgery and fraudulent use or possession of identifying information, right? I'm an identity thief. So that was so far out of the realm of possibility for somebody like me, until it wasn't, until God said, here you go. And this woman said, I know she knows every single thing about me, and yet she knows my character. Like, that's the power of this program in a relationship with God, that we really can recover to the point where we're completely different people than we were even 7.5 years ago. That's not Tracy. That's God in Tracy's life, right? That's just my experience with it. I get to be of service to other women. Even women. Yesterday was a really profound moment for me because there's a friend of ours who's been sober longer than I have, and I look up to women. I look up to everybody, any time in sobriety, but there's those people that have whatever amount of time they have when you meet them, and it's like, wow, I may never have that much time. With this woman, she doesn't have so much more time than me that it was attainable. But yesterday, to get to say to her, because she's struggling with something, to say, God is or he isn't. God does for us what we can't do for ourselves, and God's got you. I'm sorry you're going through something hard. And she's like, how are you so convinced? Because of everything that I've just told you. There's not a time in my life that I can't look back and say, God saved me from something, right? God saved me from being obese for the rest of my life because he gave me a bicycle to ride, right? It's me putting my foot, putting whatever tools are given to me to use. Because at 45, it's hard for anybody to lose weight, but they talk about how it's hard for women after a certain age to lose weight, right? It was easy for, you just got to do the work. You just got to do the work, y'all. That's it. They say it's a simple program. It is a simple program. And it's not always easy to remember that God's everything, because I promise you, some days I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? The truth of the matter is, if I go to God, the answers come, right? I don't know how much simpler to make it, except to say that the times in my life when I have gotten away from, like there was one job that I had when I was at Goodwill, one of the places, the guy that I worked for, he was horrible. He was an awful, awful person. I'm sure he wasn't really, he was just awful to me. And I remember waking up one morning and thinking, what good is prayer and meditation going to do? Because it's just going to be a crap show at work anyways, right? And guess what? It was. And then talking to my, you know, I would call my sponsor, and when the first thing I think is F you, I know that there's got to put, I've got to put some pen to paper, right? But it's not, it's like the last thing I want to do. And so I got back into it, started praying and meditating every morning, started praying for him, started praying and meditating. I mean, I continued to pray and meditate every single morning. And what happened was I got better. He didn't change one bit, but he was tolerable to me, right? And then as luck would have it, again, not because God loves me special, but because God takes care of Tracy, that dude resigned and left, like, after I got well around it, right? It's a matter of me getting well around whatever the situation is. Just about the time I'm ready to pull my hair out with my daughter, 18 months ago, well, I'm not going to give her any time. Next Sunday, my daughter will celebrate 18 months of sobriety. And what's so cool about that is not that I had anything to do with it, except that she got to see what it looks like to walk the walk, talk the talk, and she got over being mad at her mom for getting sober and everything. I was that person, you know, look, Ma, ain't it grand, the wind stopped blowing. Because she was mad at me for a long time that I was sober, and she got over that, and she saw that life really is better for me, and it can be for you too. So, y'all, good luck to you. If you're here, can stay. If come back after you're out, enjoy the alumni, participate. Thanks.